Have you ever missed a mortgage payment?
No.
Have you ever missed a bill?
No.
Treat your savings the exact same way.
Right.
Pay yourself first.
Welcome to the People of Dubai podcast. And on this episode, we have Jo Woodhouse, the financial advisor. Excited to hear this one. I think I need all the help here, to be honest, and I'm sure most of our listeners do too.
Yep.
So welcome.
Thank you.
So you're in Dubai this week?
Yeah, we flew in Tuesday evening and we're here until Sunday.
Nice. So you used to live in Abu Dhabi?
Yes, we spent 10 years in Abu Dhabi from 2010 to 2020, back in the days before F1 and before anyone knew where or what Abu Dhabi was. We had 10 amazing years here. And the only reason we moved back was family, really. So at the time, I've got twin boys. So I've got three kids under the age of five. So I've got no hair. I had a straight hairline 5 years. No, I didn't really. But
congrats.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. So it's a noisy house. But I've got twin boys, Henry and Jasper. They're 4 and a half now. And my daughter, Aubrey, she's 18 months. At the time, the boys were one. And I was spending 3-4 days a week flying around the region, seeing clients, Saudi, all over the place. My wife had sort of had enough before, she's a bit of a homebird, and she said, look, I'm a single parent 4 days a week. I'd rather be a single parent back in the UK where I've got my mum, I've got family, I've got friends around me. Yeah, more support. Can you, instead of flying from Abu Dhabi to Saudi, can you fly from the UK to the Middle East? And I'm like, we can give it a go. So this was summer 2019. So the plan was then to do 2 weeks Middle East, 2 weeks UK, and back and forth. And we were going to try it for 3 months. Laura was going to go back for the summer for 3 months. I was going to go back and forth for 3 months.
Yeah.
Make sure we could hack it sort of thing before we then committed to moving two kids, two dogs, two cats, and a house full of stuff back to the UK, which is not cheap.
No, it's giving me anxiety already. Yeah.
And then 2 days before we were due to go back for that 3 month summer trip, my mum found out she got terminal cancer.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
So we then, this sounds really grim, but we then decided at that point, right, we're gonna do it. We'll go back. Worst case scenario, when my mum passes away, hopefully which will be as long as possible, if we hate the UK, nothing then stops us coming back. My mum unfortunately passed away 2 years ago. But we love it. Like, we love the UK now. Settled there. I work mainly from Zoom now in this post-COVID world that we live in, which that were a massive benefit for us because I gave myself 2 years doing 2 weeks. I didn't enjoy traveling, being away from my family, being away from my wife. And I gave myself sort of 2 years to, right, within these 2 years, I'm going to reduce the amount of time traveling from 2 weeks to maybe a few days a month, if that. And I did the first few trips and it was so stressful.
I think when you think of flying with business or, I don't know, with work, everyone thinks it's really good. It's just not, is it?
The novelty wears off.
Very quick, yeah. When I started doing it, it was great. It was an adventure, but it just got to the stage where it weren't as bad when we lived here and I was flying 2 hours to Saudi and I'd go on back then it was Sunday to Thursday, so I'd go on a Monday morning and I'd be back Thursday afternoon. Mm. That weren't as bad. But then going from the UK, and it were more leading up to it, so like 3 days leading up to the flight, because I knew I weren't going to see my wife and kids for 2 weeks, I would just file. How horrible to be around.
Your wife was probably like, just go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Get him away, mate.
Yeah. Oh, I were horrendous. Yeah. Because I was stressed out. I was just anxious with everything. Didn't want to go.
You weren't grounded. Like, you had living out of suitcases.
Yeah. And then 3 days after, and then it'd be literally 2 weeks working 20-hour days, seeing as many clients as I possibly could.
Excuse me.
And then when I got back, I'd be a zombie for 4 days. So the 2 weeks I'd be back in the UK, I may as well live on my own for a week, because I wouldn't be able to see anybody. And I'd been using Zoom for a good year. I knew Zoom inside out, upside down, on its head, for a good year before anyone knew what Zoom was. But trying to get my clients to use Zoom, that was the difficult part, because these people had been used to seeing the whites of my eyes and me buying them a coffee for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And then going from that to, let's have a Zoom call, and all I'd get was, when are you out here next? And I'd be like, oh, 3 weeks? Don't worry, Joe, I'll wait. And I'd be like, oh, don't really help me, and I've got targets, I've got bills, I've got And it just meant that this 2 week trip in UAE and Saudi, it was just crazy. I didn't sleep for 2 weeks, basically.
And then, it wasn't balanced.
Not at all.
It's actually quite nice, as more would say, but something quite positive came out of COVID.
From massively.
From a business standpoint,
yeah.
Because it changed people's mindset.
Mm.
You know, people don't work from offices anymore.
Yeah. And how are you finding it being back in the UK? Obviously, it's so different, isn't it, than living in the Middle East?
Oh, very different. We love it as a whole.
Yeah.
This place makes you lazy, man.
Convenience.
Yeah. It's very convenient. But yeah, you realise what gets done for you here, which I didn't realise until we left here. Little things like, got to go to the shop if you want to get a pint of milk.
No one
delivers it for you. Yeah. I know, but you become indoctrinated to it, don't you?
You do.
Little things like that.
And the weather, the people, things like that. Mm-hmm. I suppose being in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and then moving home, you miss that.
Yeah. So I always say to people, the best place in the world from October until April is the Middle East. Like, the climate's amazing. And I said exactly the same when we got here Tuesday. We landed Tuesday evening, we walked down to JBR, and I was just like, just that heat on your skin, and then
you fall in love with it all over again. Yeah, don't you? Just, it makes it all worth it.
Walking about yesterday in the sun, and I'm like, oh, I miss this.
It makes you feel healthier, I find, when I go home. I don't know whether it's because I'm not in a routine, but I just feel like the grey skies. I don't really go on my walks. I don't really do early morning gym sessions. I find it so hard because the sun's not shining.
I've got two dogs, so
there you go.
The walking that isn't a choice for me, to be fair. Rain, sleet, snow. Yeah. Part of it. But yeah, and then, like I said, then COVID, and then boom, overnight, everyone had to use Zoom. And it completely transformed my business.
That's good.
Do you think it's changed, like, with COVID and the way people see money? Do you reckon it put a bit of fear into people to, like, save and invest in the way people work and invest now? Like, has it changed? Or is that quite a broad question?
No, I think it has. Well, I say it did.
Yeah.
But as humans, we have very short memories, don't we?
Yeah.
So I feel it's already getting to... I mean, people haven't forgot what happened, but... I think we push it aside. So during COVID, straight after COVID, yes, I think it was at the forefront of everyone's mind, but then people go on with their lives again, don't they?
Yeah, I think you realise how much, if you were still in a job, fortunately, and you were in lockdown, you realise how much money you're saving by not going out and things like that. But that, I mean, I've already forgotten about that money.
Yeah.
I'm back out.
Already spent.
Yeah, on holidays.
Yeah. I mean, like in the UK, there was more savings per household in the UK through COVID than there's ever been in history. But now there's more debt per household than there's ever been in history.
But you kind of got in the complete opposite way, because you think when you're in COVID, you're thinking, I can't wait to go on holiday, I can't wait to go to this pub, I can't wait to go to this restaurant.
People just went mental.
Which is why in 2021 all the airports were backed up. There were huge delays on flights. They couldn't physically cover the footfall, and same with tradesmen. It took me 9 months to get a decorator in. To decorate my living room. Just because they were that booked up.
There was no materials as well in the UK. Like, you couldn't, like, tradesmen couldn't get the materials to do the work even, because there was just not enough coming in. It's insane. But going back to, like, Dubai and moving here and kind of losing your way, because on your Instagram account, I absolutely loved, you spoke about one of the worst things you can do is basically income creeping.
Yeah.
It's basically spending.
Yeah.
Keeping up with the Joneses, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Because I read, it's a few years ago now, but 40% of people who come to Dubai leave with less than what they came here with.
60%.
Is it 60% now? Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So
I assume you weren't one of them.
No. To be fair,
the dog says that we're all tipping them.
How much? I'm a Yorkshireman as well. We squeak when we walk. But I mean, look, I fell into that trap myself, and it's very easy to do out here because you're more money than you've ever earned for most people.
Yeah.
It's tax free.
Yeah.
And when you ask expats why they moved out here, 9 times out of 10, it's for monetary reasons. Tax-free, earn more money, better job prospects. better life, but I want to create a future for my family, whatever it may be. Mm. But then 60% leave in a worse financial position. So there's this disconnect somewhere. And I think a lot of it is the glitz and the glam and the bright city lights of Dubai. It sucks people in.
It's always someone richer than you.
Oh, yeah.
It's always, like you say, keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think as well, you live like it's never going to end and it's just like a party land. Like for the first 2 years I was here, every Saturday or even Sunday, it was like going out for brunch. And then I would buy an outfit for that brunch. And I was like, and then I went back and I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You had good fun though.
No, I had good fun. But then now when you look back at it and it's like what I could have spent that money on.
Yeah.
Like I've gone self-employed this year.
Okay.
Launched my own business.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But you really respect money when mm-hmm. you go self-employed. Yeah. I always respected money. I never forgot the value of a pound. Like that's how I was raised. And I never was like splurge, never got myself into debt, like on credit cards and stuff like that. But I look back at it and I'm like, oh my God, if I could have even just saved that 500 dirhams, what it could have equated to now, and I could have even put that into my business now. It's like, you, hindsight, right? If we all had hindsight, we'll be a
millionaire. Whereas I'm the opposite. I got myself in so much debt when I first moved here.
Really?
And I spent years paying off credit cards and loans. And you think you can just...
So many people
like you can
to
just
buy that.
Go on holiday, you can do everything. And I'd never had a credit card before. I literally was like, this is amazing, it's free money.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the household I grew up in, my dad, I grew up in like typical working class family in Sheffield. My dad's a market trader, so my dad sells secondhand bric-a-brac on Sheffield markets. My dad's a rag and bone man, basically. My dad's always been very, very good with money. And he's always had a saying that's always stuck with me is that if you spend £1 more than what you earn, you'll always be skint. If you spend £1 less than what you earn, you'll always have money. Mm. So I was brought up in this strict, in this environment of, if you can't afford it, you don't buy it.
Yeah.
But
same.
My dad never sort of invested anything. It was all, I'll probably get shot, get him shot for saying this, but it was all under the mattress sort of thing. Like my dad hated banks. Like my dad didn't have a bank account until I was 18 when I started working at a bank. I opened his first bank account for him. That was my dad. It was cash is king, proper Yorkshireman, flat cap. Like he wouldn't have been out of place with a whip it on a lead. Squeaks when he walks, one of them sort. And it actually did the opposite to me. So I turned 18, even though I was in finance, I turned 18 and just went a bit silly with it because I were earning all this money and I can pay it off. And then when I moved here, I moved here when I was, moved to Abu Dhabi when I was 22. And overnight started earning more money than I could ever imagine. Like took to the job really well in financial services, started doing really well. And it was a commission only job, so I didn't get a salary. And so you literally got out exactly what you put in.
Mm.
And I got into this very silly game of, I completely disconnected myself with money. And I stopped looking at things as monetary value. But I've always been a stats man and a numbers man. So I knew exactly how many calls I needed to make to book a meeting in, how many meetings I needed to sit to take a client on, what my average client size was. So I knew all these numbers. So I actually stopped looking at things, expensive things, as that's going to cost X, but that's one more client.
Yeah.
That's just two more clients. So if I just work a bit harder next week, I can make that back. And I was in a fortunate position where my bank account was still growing, but the amount of money I was spending was insane. And I didn't have a care in the world. I was preaching to other people what to do, and I had to save their money, I had to invest their money, but I weren't doing it myself. And it was only when I hit the ground with a bang. So my wife and I got married. We came out here together, we got married. We then found out we couldn't have children. So we went through IVF, which was horrendous. And it took 5 rounds of IVF before the boys were born. And it was sort of at this time when I'd changed companies, the market was down, this new company I didn't get paid for 6 months, and we're literally shelling out money like water on these rounds of IVF, like 10,000 to 15,000 pounds, one of them 20,000 pounds for one of the rounds of IVF. We needed all these extra tests to it. And I very quickly ran out of money then. And at the time I was in this victim mentality of why me, this company's horrendous, the market's down, no one's buying, why have I not been paid? Why can't we have kids? And it was only when I actually sat back and took stock and stopped playing that victim card that I was like, hang on, Joe. And I worked out how much I'd earned since I moved to Abu Dhabi, which I'll not tell you the number.
That's so sickening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked out how much I'd earned and then how much I'd got. And then, right, so that's how much you've actually spent. And it was only when I did that and I looked at the house I was sat in, massive four-bedroom house in Abu Dhabi, which we didn't need because there were just two of us and two cats and two dogs.
Yeah.
We got a pool on outside. We got two flash cars, which we didn't really need because I was in Saudi Arabia 4 days a week. And we went on all these expensive holidays and we were out every weekend. And it was when I took stock of that and I was like, actually, you've been a pillar with your money. And it was only then that I really put systems in place. And I suppose it was getting to that low point that really I had that light bulb moment and it made me wake up and start taking my own advice, I suppose.
Yeah. Practice. That's really interesting when you say about monetary value. I can really relate to something. I just don't think that that's actually a cost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure so many people think like that. So if you were to give, I suppose, like a piece of advice to expats or anyone living in Dubai,
yep.
I don't know, how did you... You obviously had this light bulb moment, yep. But how do you get there? Give some advice.
I mean, hopefully people won't have to go through sort of what I went through in order to do that. But pay yourself first. So when I always say to people, have you ever missed a mortgage payment?
No.
Have you ever missed a bill?
No.
Treat your savings the exact same way.
Right.
Pay yourself first. Mm. So the day after, so you set a separate bank account up, and the day after payday, you have a standing order, a direct debit. Leave your bank account and go into that.
Yeah.
And make it non-negotiable. Call it a bill, call it a tax, call it whatever you want in your own head, but make that non-negotiable. So the day after payday, that's gone, that's saved, and then you spend what's left. And do a budget. So do a budget and work out what your needs, not your wants, but what your needs are, what your necessities are. And then give yourself an allowance for what your wants are. So for your brunches, for your nights out, for your
treats.
Clothes that you don't really need,
yeah.
Which I'm as guilty as that with anybody, but and sort of stick to a budget with that. And all a budget is, some people get really flustered when I mention the word budget. It's just telling your money. So doing a budget is telling your money where to go instead of your money guiding you, which is what happens if you don't actually have a budget in place.
My problem is I'll go to that pot of money that I put forward at the beginning of the month and be like, oh, I can use that. So do you know what I mean? That's
a
really difficult one.
And with that, I mean, call that's your emergency pot. So the first thing anyone needs is 6 months' expenses in an emergency pot, in a separate bank account. And that's for if the car breaks down. That's for when you need to renew your car and you realise you've got 5,000 for speeding fines on it.
Yeah.
That's for family emergencies back home.
A rainy day fund, call it.
Yeah, exactly.
We've all got them.
Exactly the same thing. And I always say to people, have 6 months expenses.
Yeah.
So if you're earning 40,000 a month and you're spending 20,000 a month, you therefore need 120,000 dirham sat in a separate bank account, and that's your emergency pot.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that and something happens, that means you need to bounce on credit cards, which then takes you 10 steps back.
Yeah, it's very good advice.
I remember growing up, when I was learning to drive, my parents said, we're going to get you your car as your 18th birthday present, but you need to have 6 months of like worth of petrol, the insurance in the bank, everything. And that taught me, the car itself was like minute. From a cost value to like what you had to put into it. And my mum was like, if it breaks down, you need to, or brand new tires. Like, and it literally took me, no word of lie, it took me like a year to like constantly save just for this car. And I had to prove that I had that money.
Yeah.
And it's so true, because when COVID hit where I lived, it was so sad, but there was a lot of eviction notices like on doors in apartments. And it was because obviously they bought apartment here, which was like an amazing for them, an achievement, but they didn't have enough savings to pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
So they were literally living month by month thinking this will never end, I'll always have a job, and look what that taught us. Mm.
Yeah, and that's a question that I guess a lot. It's like, Joe, what's the best investment I can make?
Yeah.
And for me, the best investment you can make initially is cutting debts. So making sure that you're debt free.
Okay.
Second best investment you can make is protection. So life insurance, if you've got a family, serious illness protection, i.e. if you got died, and this, for obvious reasons we've just discussed, this is something I'm really passionate about, that there's a policy you can take out that if you got, and I'm not wishing on anyone, but if you got diagnosed with cancer yesterday, it pays out a lump sum. And yeah. A lot of people mistake this with your medical insurance. Your medical insurance will cover the medical treatment, but it won't give you anything else.
Yeah.
And as we know out here, the sick pay is not the best with a lot of companies.
No.
So all good and well that you're employed by company X, and if you're having 12 months of chemotherapy, yes, your company will cover that, providing you remain employed. But while you're not working and not getting paid, who's going to pay your rent?
Yeah.
Who's going to pay your kids' school fees? Who's going to pay your car finance? Who's going to pay for your grocery, your electric, your water, your aircon bill, and everything else? So having this policy in place pays you out a lump sum that you can then either, again, some people might decide, you know what, sod this, don't want to be in Dubai anymore, I want to be back home with my family at this time. So it covers the cost of that. Might pay your mortgage off, might pay for alternative treatment if that's what you want, or it might just be money that you can shove in the bank and live off for the next 12, 18, 24 months until you get yourself back on your feet.
Yeah.
So that second, third is, as we've already discussed, get an emergency pot up, and you need to do all of that before you even think about investing. Because people try to run before they can walk.
Mm.
But you just need to get those foundations laid first.
And investing is such a big question, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard. It's such a mind build.
Yeah.
And honestly, because it sounds quite sad, but the generation we're in, we get educated through social media.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it is so, I follow you and you are all about keeping it simple,
yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Love. But I follow other accounts and, you know, reels come through and it's like, they say, don't invest in property. Like, cause it's going to fall. Like everyone has a different opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
And it's so confusing of like what to listen to and what to, everyone's like buy gold, buy diamonds.
I mean, look, for me, okay, so for me, I look at it, so saving, speculating, and investing. So saving is money in your bank. That's your emergency pot, that's your rainy day fund, okay?
Yeah.
It's never going to earn any interest. Yes, if you take inflation into account, it's going to lose money, but it's there. It's there for your rainy day, it's there if anything happens, you need it. Like, it's not for discussion, you need that money there as an emergency pot. So that's saving. Secondly is speculating, okay? So for me, speculating is buying something what has no inherent value to you today. So what I mean by that is, you buy gold.
Mm.
If you buy a gold bar from me, you can hold that gold bar for 1,000 years. It'll never earn you a penny. Until the day you come to sell it in the hope that someone else will pay you more money than what you paid for it. So Bitcoin is exactly the same. You buy Bitcoin today. Okay, that will earn you nothing until the day you come to sell it in the hope that some other fool will pay you more money than what you paid. So you need to sell that thing in its entirety in order to eat. That for me is not investing. For me, what investing is buying something that gives you two bites of the cherry. So while you hold it, it pays you an income. And then the day you come to sell it, all being well, it's grown in value and that's your capital growth as well. So, and there's only really sort of three ways you can do that. One is property. So you buy a property today, you rent it out, that's your income coming in every month.
Yeah.
You can then choose to reinvest that if you wish, but it's paying you an income. So it's valuable to hold that asset. Then the day you come to sell it, all being well, property market's increased, that's your capital growth. Second is sort of fixed income, which is buying something what then just like a fixed deposit, what pays you a regular income from it. And thirdly is investing in the stock market. So you invest in the stock market, and I'll explain why in a minute, but you invest in the stock market, and then while you invest in the stock market, the companies then pay you what's called a dividend, which is basically a share of their profits. That's your income. Then again, the day you come to sell it, stock market's grown in value, that's your capital growth. So for me, look at investing as, does it pay me an income while I hold it? And does it also have the opportunity to grow in value? So it gives you two opportunities to make money on it.
Interesting. I feel like I needed a notebook then.
and again, that's the other thing with the stock market, and people get really sort of flustered with it. What is it? All the stock market is, it's just a collection of the greatest companies around the world. It's a marketplace. It's like going out to a souk. Mm. That's all it is. It's just different companies selling different things. And if you look around this room today, there will be thousands of companies, products in here that are on the stock market. Mm. You're living in it. Whether you like it or not, you're in it. And when you invest in it, all you are doing, you are buying a very small percentage of all those companies. So you are then sharing in their profits.
Interesting. And then what about retirement and people thinking when they retire, or pensions?
All a pension is a wrapper or a box, if you like, to put investments in its most simple form. But in terms of retirement, the first thing I say to people is, work out, or with any investing, to be fair, don't just invest for the sake of it. Because the first time that anything goes wrong, first time you went on holiday, when it's Christmas, or if the markets have a bit of a wobble, you'll pull out and you'll panic and you'll sell.
Yeah.
You need to have a real goal attached to why you're investing. Which is why if someone says to me, Joe, I've got 100 grand, what can you make in the next 12 months? I'm like, I'm not the right person for you to speak to. For me, it needs to have a tangible goal attached. Whether that be that, for me, I've got three kids under the age of five, and for me to, this will stand the hairs on the back of your neck up. So for me to send all my three kids to university when they're 18, taking inflation into account, if I want to pay their course fee in the UK, the course fees, their rent and their living costs, it's going to cost me almost £650,000.
Oh, I can believe that.
So they're not going to university.
Yeah. They're going to the University of Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they still do YTS schemes?
Yeah.
So it's knowing that. It's knowing that number and then funneling that back to today.
Yeah.
Because if I look at that, the kids' uni fees, to send the kids through university, there's three ways I can pay for that. One is I can worry about it when they're 18. Because if they went today, I could afford it. But in 13, 17 years' time, could I afford it then? I don't know. Work might not be going as well. I might not want to work then.
Yeah.
I might not want to work as much then.
Stuff happens in life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, kicking that can down the road is a massive risk. Second thing I can do is, again, worry about it when they're 18 and take a loan out. Like, remortgage my house or make them get a student loan, which for me doesn't make sense because I'm taking this massive bill and I'm making it even more expensive because either me or my kids are then going to pay an interest on it for X, Y, Z years. Well, the third thing you can do is work out how much it is, which we know that number, funnel it back to today and work out what I need to do today, how much I need to invest per month or as a lump sum number now that can then grow and work for me for the next 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years and get my money working for it, which ultimately, one, it's a lot safer to do so because I can work out exactly, I need to put X amount of pounds a month away in order to do that for the next 15 years. Secondly, it reduces the bill because that's 650 grand then. If I've got my money growing for me for the next 15 years, it ultimately brings down the amount what I need to put towards it because my money's working for me.
Mm.
So first thing is, I go off on all these tangents. So first,
Bill,
yeah.
Bill, honestly, it's free advice.
Yeah, but honestly, put a goal to it. So, and if it's your retirement, work out when you want to retire, where you want to retire. What? And again, not a lot of people know this.
Especially being in Dubai. I think this is where some people go wrong, is they come to Dubai and they don't have that plan. And then next thing you know, 20 years have gone past and they're like, oh my God, where are we going? Where are we going to next? And they haven't got a pension or any savings and they have to maybe go back to the UK because obviously the healthcare's like a part of the country, so to speak. I know you pay for it in taxes and things like that, but you limit your options, I think.
Yeah,
you don't have a plan.
Yeah, and it's like anything, the sooner you start, the better.
And it feels so far away to some people that
because
you think, oh, I'll just think about that in the next couple of years, don't you?
Think of it this way then. So 20 years sounds a long time, doesn't it?
You can tell me how many paychecks there?
240 paydays.
Yeah, it's disgusting, isn't it?
That's it. In 6 months, like that, 234 paydays. 6 months after, just like that, 228 paydays.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So true.
It's amazing how quick that comes out.
And it's rent as well. People go, oh, I've rented for 10 years. I could have bought this place by now. It's like literally we all have the same conversations. Yeah. It's insane. But sorry, you were going to say there was a point number two. I stopped your tangent.
I'm lost.
You said put a goal in place.
Yes, so put a goal in place. So I said, so work out why you're investing. So work out why you're investing, work out why it's important to you, and then work out how much that means you need at X, and then funnel it back down to today. And then not only will you know that, again, if that's important enough to you, when you're going on holiday, you'll not stop that month. You'll not kick the can down the road. At Christmas, you'll still invest that month. And again, make it non-negotiable, like we do with savings. Mm. And you also know how much you need to put away. Do you know what I mean? If you work out today, you need to invest £1,000 a month to be able to comfortably retire and do what you want in 20 years' time. Yet you, as it stands now, you can only afford £600 a month. You then got to be very conscious of what you're spending money on, and then in 6 months you review it again. Can I increase that to £650, £700 a month, £3,000, £4,000 a month, whatever it is, the equivalent of, and it gives you a goal to work towards as well. Instead of just investing mindlessly and thinking, oh, this is not really, in 6 months, I'm not really working, I'm not really doubling money yet, so I'll pull out.
I have to ask, from being in finance in the Middle East for some time, so obviously you were in sales, and you still are in sales, you advise.
Yeah.
What was that like, and what was the experience of that?
So I came from the UK.
Because it's a different...
I were in banking in the UK.
Yeah.
So I spent 7 years in banking in the UK, in the branches, where financial services is well-respected. Then I moved out here in 2010, where it was like the Wild West.
Yeah.
And I remember my first day in the office, and there was me that had been working in the bank. There was... the company I used to work for, there was me working in the bank. There was a guy next to me that last week before was selling mobile phones. There was a guy two down that week before was selling windows. There was another guy that was selling cars. And I was like, and we were all going through the same training course on basically how to advise people on their life savings. And I was like, what is this? It was just surreal.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a big cold call culture out here as well within financial services, which is also what gives it a bad name.
Yeah,
I hate it, and that's why I create.
I hate it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It actually puts people off. Oh yeah, definitely. To financial advisors in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of companies that you don't know or trust and things like that. So, where would we I don't know. How do we get over that here?
I mean, look. So, and this is why I create the content that I do, because my industry is full of jargon and noise and BS.
And also, it doesn't make sense to some people that doesn't understand finance.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And look, the industry's built that way. So, and I get a lot of stick when I say this from other people, in my peers in my industry, that the industry is built this way to ultimately keep the consumer, i.e. you guys, at arm's reach, and to make people like me sound more intelligent and much more important than we actually are. When in reality, if you follow a few simple steps, for most people, you can get where you need to be.
Yeah.
Before you have to employ someone like me to help you get you to that next level. And that's the message I try and put across within my videos. And it all really started when I've always prided myself on keeping things super simple. And I've always said, if you can't explain something to an 8-year-old, you don't really understand it yourself. And that's something that I've always tried sticking to with everything. So I'm like a caveman, I'm a Yorkshireman, I'm a simple creature. And I know what I'm like. If I don't understand something, I'll bury my head in the sand and I'll do nothing about it.
Most people will.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the message that I try and get across to my clients. And so the feedback I get is that I'm very good at taking this jargon-filled nonsense and just breaking it down into plain English.
I actually think as well that's why a lot of people don't invest, or they don't know where to begin with their money, because it's the scare, isn't it, as well? Yeah. Like, I don't understand it. Why am I going to do this with my money and things. So with your, I know we've spoken about it a couple of times, but with your social media, we'll ask you at the end and stuff where we follow you, mm-hmm. but so our listeners know where to reach out, but you just do short, simple videos explaining basically what we've spoken about and more today, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's no sales, there's no jargon, there's no...
They're hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, there's a few skits in there as well. And the reason I do that, and look, I'm a massive believer of, if you're smiling and if you're happy and if you're laughing and you're enjoying what you are watching,
yeah,
you retain more information.
You do.
So I try and keep them as, well, I suppose, as lighthearted, talking about death as lighthearted as you can get, but I try and keep them as lighthearted as possible to just keep people engaged. If it's something boring, you're not going to watch it.
That's true. Exactly. What's the kind of the most popular question that you get in your Instagram or your DMs from people?
What's the best investment I can make this
really?
Yeah.
People want a quick fix, don't they?
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly.
And you broke down in one of your videos. It was like if you invest £600 for 40 years, then you, I think, and it was like to make a million by the time you're 60.
Yeah.
That was it.
Don't and ask it, me to quote them figures.
No. It's not it was so simple to break it down, and yeah. it also is a reality check. Is I don't know. Some people might think there's a quick fix, but I believe that.
And this is why crypto has become so popular and NFTs.
Yeah, I invested, played like in crypto. I literally put 2,000 dirhams in because I had no idea what I was doing. And like what you said, I didn't do enough research, but I was like, do you know what? Everyone's talking about it. Let me get on the hype. Everyone was like, it's crash, buy now. And I was like, oh, just just put 2,000 dirhams, you know, have a little play. Like, kind of like gambling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Put 2,000 dirhams in. I looked the other day and it was like, literally, I lost like 600 dirhams. Yeah. But everyone was on that hype. And I think even the people investing in it, like me, didn't know enough about it.
No, they don't. No. Look, no one understands it properly.
I get asked to explain it, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All a crypto is, it's actually a currency.
Yeah.
It's not an investment, it's a currency. Yeah. And it's that volatile, it bounces up and down, that's how people make or lose money. But the problem you've got is when you've got sort of butchers and bakers and candlestick makers telling you what to do with your life savings, usually that's the time to run the opposite way.
Yeah.
Because they get on this hype, and cryptocurrency and NFTs, not as trendy as it was 6 months ago, now everything's crashed, but it's become very, it's the best marketing job in the world that they've done. Yeah. It's insane because it's become trendy. And like NFTs as well, I mean, I've actually done a couple of Mick taking videos on these, but like NFTs, it's with a lot of people, the best thing about buying an NFT is to be able to tell other people you've got an NFT.
Yeah.
And it's like, you wouldn't go to Morrison's, buy a loaf of bread and put a photo of that loaf of bread on your Instagram profile photo, would you?
No.
But people do it with...
Most dinner parties, I bought an NFT.
yeah. But yeah. People do that with these NFTs they buy. They buy an NFT and then feel the need to plaster it all over the social media to tell the world I've got an NFT.
Yeah.
Who are you trying to impress?
It is. And I think it's media that done that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, and if there was NFT, well, there wouldn't be like 10 years ago, because obviously like obviously with the technology and stuff, but people wouldn't have jumped on it as quick.
No, I don't know. I still think it's ridiculous, but I'll just keep it.
But again, and this to me is living proof that no one really understands it.
No.
Jack Dorsey, the guy who created Twitter, he sold his first tweet as an NFT for $2.9 million.
Oh my goodness, okay.
The guy that bought it was the owner of a $1 billion valued blockchain company. Arguably, if anyone can get it right, it's him. He then tried selling that NFT 9 months later and couldn't get $14,000 for it. Now, if that's not living proof that no one really understands it,
yeah.
I don't know what is.
Yeah.
But apart from Dave the plumber down your local pub, he obviously knows best of it. Exactly.
Stick to what you know.
Yeah.
So, Joe, what's kind of up and coming for you? What's down there in the pipeline?
I mean, look, at the moment, we're just creating the content. That's where, to be honest, that's where most of my business comes from as well. A lot of people contact me on Instagram on the back of the videos I put out. I'm going, we've got quite a few sort of talks booked, sort of events, nice. Corporates, companies. Been asked to go to a school, do a talk to the kids there as well.
By the way, that is so important. We don't do enough of that at schools, do we?
We touched upon it. I remember reading an article in some states in America, they installed financial education. It was a woman, she passed recently, I've forgotten her name, but she made it like mandatory and basically taught kids the difference between a savings, a current account, how to write a check. And it's mental, like how many people don't know that. Like I was taught from my parents, but like
you just don't learn it.
Yeah. You don't get taught the basics.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane. Like we have to memorize a periodic table. Yeah. We don't know what tax is. We don't know what a mortgage is. We don't know how bad getting a credit card is when you turn 18. We're not taught these things in school. We're not taught how to save, how to budget, how to manage your finances. No matter what industry you go into, whether it is a job where you have to memorize a periodic table, which highly doubt for most people it will be, but you still need to manage money.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, what's more important than things like that, it's money management. It's sales, learning how to sell yourself, because we're selling all the time. Like I'm selling my kids to go to bed, my kids are selling me to buy them some sweets, like I'm selling my wife to go out for dinner. I sold my wife to be able to come here for 5 days on a business trip. But again, that for me is really important as well. So I do think there's a lot of things that we miss out in the schools, and I'll go down a rabbit hole with this, but I think the schools, where I think the failing is, I think they just teach kids to memorize things instead of actually learning a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They teach you to tick the boxes, they teach you to...
And also it's society, isn't it? I always find at the moment where, like I went back to the UK recently and so many people are saying to me, okay, you're married now, like when are you having a child? Where are you buying a house? Wait, and you think you don't need to do all of this tick box stuff that everyone just expects you to do.
And also, I went to university, but my friends who I went to university with, none of them, I think it's only really me, none of them done what they studied. They just, they're literally, one's become a nurse, like it's so random. Yeah. Like, so they spent that money paying off that debt and they had a good time, got a qualification, but they're not actually using it.
I had the same thing. So I left school when I was 15.
Yeah.
I only knew what I didn't want to do, which was work on the markets with my dad. I remember being about 13 year old. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a boxer. So I used to box growing up from being 10 to 21.
Yeah.
And my dad said, right, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to be a boxer. He's like, what's your plan B? Well, I don't know, to work on markets for you. You seem to be doing all right. And it was the biggest mistake I ever made, because he said, right, okay. 2 weeks later was the school summer holidays. And he said, right, you're coming on the markets with me for the summer holidays. I'm like, I want to have a bike. I want to play with mates. He's like, I'll pay you £9 a day. And I'm like, that's an Xbox for 6 weeks. Yep, I'm up for that.
Sold.
Yeah. What he didn't tell me though, so we set off every morning at 4 a.m. We didn't finish till about 6. So we go to the market nice and early, be on the markets all day, get back from the market, then have to unload his van, load his van back up for the next day. Yeah. So it was literally 14-hour days. At the end of the first day, he paid me my £9 salary in pound coins. And then at the end of 6 weeks, what do you want to do when you leave school? I still don't know, but I just know I don't want to work in the market. So it worked.
Got some very cheap labour those 6 weeks. He knew exactly
what he was doing. Yeah, oh, it was horrendous. But yeah, so I left school not knowing what I wanted to do, but I had it drilled into me. If you don't go to college or university, you either work on the markets with your dad, which I didn't want to do, or you be a bin man, which I didn't want to do. So I went to college, started my A-levels, but at the same time, I also got a job on Saturdays working as a cashier in Lloyds TSB, which is now Lloyds Bank in the UK. And I just fell in love with it. I remember sat on sort of like the cashier line and speaking to all the cashiers who were all like middle-aged women. And I won't say the names, but she got a degree in this, she got a degree in that. One of them had got a master's and I've got A-levels in this and I'm this qualified. And I'm like, and you sat here?
Yeah.
And then I remember speaking to the top salesperson in the UK at the time, who was at my branch. guy called Ian Twarrick. And I remember speaking to him and I said, Ian? He's like, yeah. I went, what qualifications have you got? And he just leant back in his chair and he got a matchstick in his mouth. He usually always have a matchstick in his mouth. And he leant back in his chair, took it out, he went, son, when I were your age, I couldn't spell my own effing name. And I was like, right. And then he reached in his drawer, pulled this piece of paper out and threw it at me. And I opened it up and it got more zeros on it than I'd ever seen. And it was payslip. And I was like, I want to do this. I said, what should I do? And I sat down and he said, what? He says, you're at college, aren't you? I said, yes, I hate it. He went, go in tomorrow and just quit. Probably not the most responsible advice I've ever got, but I did. Yeah. Went in the next day, quit college, and then started working full-time in the bank.
Wow.
Amazing. And that's where you really learned your sales technique, yeah. Would you say?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to ask, going a bit off course now, but obviously you talk about sales and we're in it, everyone does sales and manages in sales. Like, as I said, I've gone self-employed and I am in sales now, but my partner, we spoke about the sales dark hole, and it's so easy to fall into it. And it's also like a mindset thing. Like, you give advice on your Instagram account, very much like on financial, but like your morning routine and like how to motivate yourself. Obviously, you spoke about getting in a bit of a rut when your wife's going through IVF and why me and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, what advice would you give from a motivational standpoint? Because everyone gets in that rut, even like a savings rut, a sales rut. Like, you have good days and bad days.
Focus on what you can change. Focus on what you can affect.
Okay.
So whether that, if we're talking savings, whether that be doing a budget, like working out where your money's actually going, then setting a fixed amount aside every month to save towards that. If it's sales, it's looking at your stats. There's going to be at some point where, through the funnel sort of thing, where things are going wrong. If you know what your numbers are, if you know how many people you need to speak to book a meeting in, how many meetings you need to get a client, how many clients you need to get to for this, you can work out sort of where the missing link is. And you can work out what you need a bit of help on. And reach out to people that can help you. Especially if you're in the region here, a very good friend of mine, Spencer Lodge, is phenomenal when it comes to sort of business, sales, motivation, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd say seek out someone that's doing it and ask them for help.
What motivates you?
Ooh, what motivates me? It sounds very cliche and cheesy, but I love helping people, which is essentially what my job is.
Yeah.
My definition of success has massively changed over the last, since I had kids and since my mum died.
Yeah.
Before, my definition of success was earning as much money as possible, having as many clients as possible, helping as many people as possible, getting as much money in the bank as possible, getting as many much invested as possible. That was my definition of success. Always chasing, never happen. And then when my mum died, and I went in a real black hole with that, like really struggled for a few months with it. I went to quite a dark place. And it sort of made me just review everything.
Mm.
And you can have all the money in the world, but if a doctor taps you on the shoulder and says you're going to die in here, what good is it?
I mean, health is wealth, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it helped me get my health in order. I mean, I'm now like very regimented with my training, fitness, and nutrition regime, but also family as well. So like my definition of success now is being able to close my laptop at 5 o'clock. It's being able to switch my phone off a day a week. It's being able to pick the kids up from school, drop the kids off at school. Little things like bath and bed routine with the kids, like being there every night when they go to bed. It's being able to go on holiday for a week with my family and switch my phone off completely, which I'd recommend to anybody, by the way. And it's just being fully present in that
moment.
Making
those memories.
Yeah. Because you can never get them back.
No.
Exactly. And one question we ask all of our guests is, what is your advice to your younger self?
Practice what you preach. Yeah, it took me a few years to realise that.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show. And where can our listeners find your Instagram?
Joe_familywealth101.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We learned a lot.
Excellent. And to our listeners, you can follow us on the_podxb on Instagram, TikTok, and search for us on the People of Dubai on YouTube. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.